Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I think it's fair to say this 2018 has been an extraordinary year in the state of Arizona when it comes to education. We saw things that many people had never seen in their lifetimes, like a teacher strike, for goodness sakes, the mobilization of teachers and parents, in some cases students and others, behind the Red for Ed campaign. You had politicians jockeying to take credit for it, others attempting to avoid blame.
You had 50,000 people. There was this sea of red marching from Bank One Ballpark to the Capitol. You had schools closed down for 5 days, parents trying to figure out what to do with their kids, and arguing whether they support or they don't support the strike, the walkout, whatever you want. At the end of the day, Bruce, teachers walked away with a 20% increase by 2020. Now, there are some nuances to that. Not all are going to get 20%.
Right. We
and
know
that's
going to
depend on the district. And there were a lot of different moving parts with the whole Red for Ed.
There's a lot of vagaries with that, yeah.
But the Red for Ed movement slowly morphed into the Invest in Ed initiative. This is now the ballot measure that it looks like you're going to have the chance to vote on. It looks like they got enough signatures. Of course, they need to get validated and so on and so forth. But it looks like come November, we, the people of Arizona, are going to be able to decide whether or not we want to, for lack of a better term, tax the rich to create a new revenue stream for education.
Yeah, we talked about this briefly last week when you weren't here. And to be clear, I'm opposed to this. You know, I will gleefully vote against it. It may pass. I get it. My problem is maybe more of a fundamental one. Why are we letting the state legislature off the hook in whatever definition you use of properly funding education by basically letting voters say, well, we're just going to take that guy over there's money to pay for it, as opposed to forcing him to make tough decisions at the state capitol? So I have a fundamental issue with that. But there is another issue when you start in down the tax the rich, go after them and rah, 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 and the 1%. It may not turn out the way you think it will.
The governor says he's on the side of teachers, but there are other considerations.
I want to see our teachers get a pay increase. I also want to make sure that we don't kill our state's economy.
The Invest in Ed initiative raises the state income tax from 4.54 to 8% on individuals making $250,000 to $500,000 a year and families making from $500,000 to $1 million a year.
Here's the interesting thing about all of this. The idea of taxing the rich sounds good to some.
It always plays well. Right?
Well, it sounds good to some because I'm not rich, so I'm not going to have to.
I don't have to pay for it.
And so my kid gets more money because my kid goes to a public school here in the state of Arizona. Hey, woo, yay.
I'll vote to take someone else's money.
But I will not vote for this. I, too, am against it for a variety of different reasons. I don't think it is the rich's responsibility to properly fund education.
Shouldn't it be everybody's?
I think it is the legislature that really needs to reallocate. But it is all of ours. We all benefit from it.
Yeah.
We all should bear the burden. But the question also becomes if, and it's a big if, this ballot initiative passes, this Invest in Ed initiative, what would it do to the state of Arizona? Well, we don't know because it hasn't passed and we don't have any data points to study. But we can look at other places in the country where similar initiatives have passed and what has happened to them.
Okay.
Wall Street Journal took a look at the effect of Maryland's increase on their highest earners. All right. And what they found is only 1 year after they passed this,
tax the rich,
a third of the rich, I guess you could say, disappeared from the Maryland tax rolls.
Yeah. And here's the thing that your best laid intentions, again, the road to hell is paved with it, doesn't take into account. When you specifically target the rich, and to some extent they feel unfairly targeted. Yeah, I know plenty of quote-unquote rich people that pay taxes. They believe in, quote-unquote version of fair share. But this is, we want to pay teachers more money. We don't want to raise taxes on anybody else. We just want to go after these people. That you could see them saying, well, I feel unfairly targeted in this. Rich people can do something about it. If you were unfairly targeted by a tax, the gasoline tax goes up. What are you going to do about it, right? if the income tax rate in the state of Arizona for people making over 25 grand goes up, what are you going to do about it? If you are truly the rich, you know what you can do about it? You can pay an attorney to change your place of residence. You can afford to move. You can afford to do a lot of things that keep you from just having to write a bigger check to the state of Arizona. It's happened in New York. It's happened in Baltimore, where when they did that, you know what the rich people did? They left, and they ended up getting less money than they were getting before.
Instead of the state of Maryland getting the extra, let's call it $105 million that was predicted from the Tax the Rich initiative, the rich paid less in taxes.
Yeah, because there were fewer of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you've now incentivized people. But can we be clear? I'm in favor of flat tax rate for these reasons alone. Flat tax rate, no deductions. I can acknowledge that because the more money you have, the more it benefits you to spend your money with people like tax accountants and attorneys to keep from giving more of it to the government. You have incentivized people to say, well, I just need to hire a more expensive tax accountant, and I need to incorporate myself in the Grand Cayman Islands. Or you know what I'm saying? We hear about all these things. Many of them are legal. They're just expensive. And at some point, you've made it worth the rich's point to hide their money, to keep it from just giving it to the government.
You know, I want to go back to what you said, because, I wasn't here last week, and so you may have dived into this a little bit more than what I'm aware of. But the idea that, if we do as a state decide that we want to tax the rich to help fund education, it is letting our state lawmakers off the hook.
You see my fundamental...
I
have a fundamental
issue. And the other aspect of it, though, is we have also, as a state, made it more difficult for those same lawmakers to create new revenue streams because they need a supermajority in order to raise taxes or create those new revenue streams. So we're kind of in a bit of a predicament here. Now, is this the solution? No, I don't think it is. What is the solution? People smarter than I are going to have to figure that out. But what I do like is that we're talking about it. Education is a massive issue in this state, has been for a really long time. Unfortunately, though, Bruce, it hasn't gotten the attention it deserved for a really long time. It took some 50,000 people walking down through downtown Phoenix and shutting schools down for 5 days in order to wake up the state.
You say that. And I'm not. You say that, and yes, there is a new awareness, if you will, but it is an absolute abdication of responsibility on the part of elected officials, and it is if you are only interested in, and your only belief is that we are going to tax the rich as a solution to our education problem, then you don't really believe we have a problem, and you don't believe you share in it in any way, shape, or form. If it truly is the problem you say it is, people should be lining up and supporting politicians say, I'm going to raise your taxes and give the money to education. I don't see anybody doing that.
Well, I do see people, though, that have been passing the bonds and overrides in their own community. I know that we passed Prop 301, that 0.6% education sales tax. So there is movement in that area. But I would also caution those who are staunch supporters of the Invest in Ed initiative about this. This passes in November. Let's play the hypothetical. Mm-hmm. We all get the chance to go out and vote, and this passes.
And it's popular. Tax rich is popular. As long as I don't have to pay for it, I'll vote to, we saw that with the minimum wage. I'll vote to make businesses give more money to people. It's not my money.
I think you're actually going to make it much more difficult on yourselves to get the state to do anything about education, because all they're going to have to do is look at the initiative that passed.
Have
and
another
said,
initiative.
All right, so what are you doing with that money?
We're going to give money to private prisons. We're going to give money to this. We're going to pay off our political things. We're not going to put money into education.
You're kind of letting them off the hook.
And I fully
giving
expect
them an out.
Fully expect this, by the way.
What's that?
Because I am the skeptic.
Yeah, you are.
I am the cynic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proven right more often than not. Whatever increase in revenue that'll be, they'll take it out of education in the state of Arizona. The legislator will just go, hey, you've got all this new money. You don't need this. Keep the levels where they are. Because we care about education so much.
We need to start caring about it more.
a fine argument to have.
Yep.
I think the tax the rich as your solution to it is not the argument.
You and I are on the same page there.
Yeah. Tell you what. We want to give you the latest on, and this story, it's like a slow-moving train wreck. Papa John, the John in Papa John, who can't get out of his own
the John and Papa
mouth,
John.
basically, right? He's been having a bad week, and he can, you know what they say when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging?
Yeah.
He went and got new shovels. The guy's amazing. We'll give you the latest on that.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So last week, the story came to light, Pamela, as you were lounging on a beach somewhere, that John Schnatter, the John in Papa John's
Pizza.
It's
Papa John.
Papa John.
Papa John.
Papa John. There was a, what do we call it? It was a training, a media training session, a role-playing exercise conference call held by basically a PR, a marketing firm, to try to get him to stop saying stupid things in public that hurt the stock price.
Right, because he is the face of Papa John's. I mean, like, come on, when you think of Papa John's.
Better ingredients, better pizza, Papa John's.
That's what you know. That's Papa John saying that.
Well, you're not going to be seeing any more of that.
Nope.
Because he is, last year when he went after the NFL and the kneeling players and waded into that debate, he basically relinquished the CEO job. He was still chairman of the board of the company he founded, and even that ended last week.
So what did he say last week? Because, yeah, I've been out of the loop on this a little bit.
So the specific event didn't happen last week. It merely came to light last week.
Okay.
So imagine a conference call. It was unclear to me how many people on it, but it certainly sounded like a large group of people. Some people from this marketing agency, some Papa John's employees, executives, and Papa John himself.
Okay.
John. All right. And they were attempting to coach him. That was the whole purpose of this meeting, to coach him on how to better respond in social media, respond when reporters ask him questions, because he's become a bit of a lightning rod for being a little unfiltered. And they were going down kind of the racism trail of how to better respond when you're being trolled, or, you know, if someone asks you about race and issues, how to better answer. Basically, don't be yourself. Here's how to answer a question better.
All right.
And during that exercise, and this is not alleged, he admitted to all of this, okay? He acknowledged and admitted this isn't false, that he used the N-word during this exercise, and he used it in the context of, it came across like he was complaining that Colonel Sanders, because if you were Papa John, you have to go to, you know, your buddies are Colonel Sanders, Ronald McDonald, and, you know, whatever.
Wendy.
Wendy. That Colonel Sanders had used the N-word, except he used the actual word on this conference call. Apparently, there were some African-Americans on the call as well. That Colonel Sanders said, beep, N-word, right?
Yeah.
And people didn't think he was a racist, like, as in defense of... That's the way it came across to some people.
Okay, so now we got Papa John.
John.
Who apparently hasn't really learned from his mistakes and didn't take anything away from that media training phone call. Because he called into WAHAS and he did an interview with them. And he's trying to defend what happened. And, well, just take a listen for yourself.
Okay. The agency was promoting that vocabulary in that genre. And I made it real clear, listen, we're not going to go there. We're not going to talk about this. And they pushed me, and it upset me. And I just said, listen, other people have used that word. I don't and will not use that word, and people of Papa John's don't use that. And that was the comment. But they actually wanted to get into that vocabulary.
But you did use that word.
He did
you
use
did
it,
make
and the transcript
comment.
Came out of it. And Forbes magazine is the one that printed basically the quotes. And he came out and said the Forbes article is true. Yes, I did say that. He was saying, and he continued to say it was taken out of context. This was a training exercise. What I hear him saying is, I thought I was like in a safe space and I could talk like this. And I thought we were just doing role playing. But even when you and I talk, I had this conversation with Monica Lindstrom last week.
Yeah.
I say N-word. I wouldn't use it out loud in polite company. Because I know it's offensive to some people. I'm not going out of my way to try to be offensive. We can make an argument about who should use it, when they can use it. I choose not to. So he didn't choose to say N-word. He chose to use the word and then basically made the defense of, well, Colonel Sanders said it.
I don't think they were near as sensitive to this as I was, and that's why I had to vector them off this subject and say, you know, we're not going to do anything that even gets near this.
Oh, yeah.
If that was how the conversation went, I don't think he would have been forced to step down.
Well, okay, but he's also claiming this.
They said, you know, we've got this issue. In fact, they even said, if you don't, they wanted $6 million to make it go away. Like, I'm going to pay me $6 million. And, you know, they made it pretty clear that if the words were, if I don't get my money, I'm going to bury the founder. This is said to one of the executives. So I'm not for sale. You know, they can take the $6 million and whatever, they're not getting it. So, yeah.
Okay, so in essence, what he's saying,
he was blackmailed?
Yeah, that they tried to extort him. Which, you know what, Bruce?
It could be true.
Very well may have happened. I don't know. I wasn't there. But he's admitted to saying it. I think this whole idea that, like, the trainers pressured me and I was more sensitive than the trainers, yeah, no one's buying it.
I don't think so.
In fact, he's losing a lot out of it. He had to physically be removed out of the
wait a minute.
Yeah.
To kick him out of his own office at Papa John's headquarters.
In Louisville, Kentucky. Yep.
That's not good.
Nope.
Yeah. This is always a big misunderstanding. It's not holding a lot of water in Papa John's case. And instead of just shutting up and saying, you know what, on me, my bad, screwed up, he's continuing to try to defend it. And I don't know if his defense sounds very credible. So there's a new movie coming out this Friday, and it tackles the issue of teens and social media, kind of that awkwardness, bullying. It's called Eighth Grade. We're going to talk a little bit about it before I get to see the film. All right? It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So there is a movie opening up Friday. I haven't seen it yet. I do have a screening this week, Pamela, and it is called Eighth Grade. For some people, like, they get a lump in their stomach going back to remember Eighth Grade. Oh. Are there people out there that fondly remember the eighth grade? Like, eighth grade, eighth grade, that's where I peaked.
Yeah, no.
That was great.
No.
That was it. My skin, nice complexion. I was full of confidence.
Exactly. I was going there with the confidence. I knew exactly who I was and what I wanted out of life.
Nobody looks back fondly on eighth grade. But this film is starting some interesting conversations because it takes a look at a girl who, in many ways, embodies maybe what today's eighth graders are going through.
Being yourself can be hard, and it's like, aren't I always being myself? And yeah, for sure. But being yourself is like not changing yourself to impress someone else. A lot of people like call me quiet or shy or whatever, but I'm not quiet. I don't talk a lot at school, but if people talk to me and stuff, they'd find out that I'm like really funny and cool and talkative.
All right, so the movie, I believe, comes out Friday. You're going to go see
Friday.
It on Thursday. So we'll do a review for you on Friday. You're not going to want to miss that. But diving a little deeper into this, I mean, the eighth grade goes into the mind of an iPhone idol, like, teenage girl.
Yeah.
And you even heard me, if you listen to this program or have for quite some time, I have an eighth grade daughter. She has an iPad, not an iPhone.
8 year old, not eighth grade.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, I'm getting things.
Okay.
Yes,
I was going to say.
Woo, she needs to slow down.
I mean,
on
I'm
that
not
one.
Saying she's
wow.
not brilliant and jumping ahead
no,
in grades.
No.
Okay,
she'll
gosh.
Get there fast enough.
I know. I've already down. Blinked, and she's eight. I don't need her to be eighth grade. 8 year old. And I have a lot of concerns about technology as a parent, what it does to kids, and I also recognize though that this is the world that they live in, and so how can I best support her when she eventually gets that phone? Frankly, folks, I don't have that answer yet. But I also think that it's interesting because research does show mm-hmm. that excessive, compulsive smartphone use has a correlation to anxiety and depression, but there's not a lot of direct evidence that these devices actually cause any kind of mental illness. So the idea of taking away phones or limiting the amount of time a kid can be on the phone.
Which
because
we hear a lot of strategies
yeah,
about.
Yeah, in all reality, Bruce, that's kind of where my mind goes mm-hmm. because like I don't know any better. That's not going to solve all of the teenage problems with the anxiety, with the depression. It may mitigate some of them, but while you've got all these tech companies, we heard that with the latest iOS that came out from Apple, that you can monitor how much time you spend on your phone and how much time you spend on different apps, because they're trying to make their phones less addictive. You hear some of these tech giants talk about that, right? It's not going to solve the broader problem.
It doesn't get to the root.
Just blaming the machines themselves is a bit of a cop-out.
Yeah.
And so the idea of we need to be equipping young people with coping skills to battle the anxiety, battle the depression, get into the world to figure out why they need to escape, because that's exactly what these phones are. They are an escape.
Well, it isn't part of the argument. I'm going to make a broad generalization. And can I use eighth grade girls?
Sure.
Not that I remember much of it. Again, terrified of them in the eighth group. Terrified of them now.
What are we
talking about? But the idea that if you're having these issues with anxiety, depression, self-worth, any of these, you know, where you fit in the world, before, in the olden days, the 1900s, you maybe had a diary where you wrote this stuff down to, or you sat on the phone for hours with a friend. All that's changed is the tools where this is now being broadcast on YouTube, or you have a Insta story that tells this. Again, the issues themselves haven't changed. The amplification of them has changed.
I think that's a great way of putting it.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give
I'm
you
done
one.
For the
All right, I'll give
done
you one.
Done for the debt. Only going
even
downhill.
A blind squirrel. Yeah. But the amplification happens, and so does the criticism for it.
And then,
so
because nobody read your diary when you were a girl, and then made notes. You know, they didn't write in the margin, red pen, going BS.
And then photocopy it and pass it out around school. But that's exactly what's happening, because kids are living their lives online. Bo Burnham, a comedian, he's actually the one who is the director of this movie, Eighth Grade. And here's what he had to say about, you know, kids and social media and online.
If you want to learn about kids this age, it's like they're posting their entire lives online for you, so that's the way to do it. And it also wasn't just a way to find out about the a medium through which to learn about these kids. It was about them on this medium, and then imagining the person they were when the camera shut off, which was pretty evident.
So how do you cope with all of that? I mean, again, for me, it comes back down to like coping skills, helping kids develop that resiliency that I would argue, Bruce, a lot of their parents don't even have. Kids are escaping to their devices because they can't cope in reality, while their parents may be escaping with a beer or a glass of wine.
I love scotch.
Scotch, scotch,
scotch. Scotch, scotch.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody develops different coping mechanisms, forever it may be. And if you want to make an argument, I'll concede.
And some are healthy
point.
And some are unhealthy.
Fair.
Yeah.
But I'll concede the point that maybe technology and these tools have been a default and a very easy, readily available way.
Yeah.
Maybe not the best way to deal with it. Maybe not the proper way to go down it. But it's just, they're just so simple to use.
It is simple to use. And then I think of like myself being a parent. You know, life gets hard. Yeah. Adulting is hard.
Really?
And so when I go home and I'm trying to cope, if my kid escapes with her iPad, it makes it a little easier on
me. You know, are you complaining that you have a few minutes of quiet time?
It's not just looking at the kids and saying you have a problem. It's we as the parents recognizing that they're little sponges, and whatever we do, they soak up. So what example are you setting for them?
Anybody that travels a lot, maybe goes to some big city, goes west, L.A., San Fran, Seattle, you probably come back with, correct me if I'm wrong, the impression of, good grief, it's expensive to live here.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Well, guess what? People in L.A., San Fran, and Seattle are coming to the same conclusion. And all we would like to say, welcome to the Valley. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the influx. People moving here because how the hell do you afford to live in those places? It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
We know Arizona is an amazing place to live. I'm going to make the broad assumption, Pamela, that most people listening choose to live in Arizona.
Mm-hmm,
they
love
living here in the Valley. I just came back. I spent the weekend. I went to the Grand Canyon, Sedona, hiked Devil's Bridge. Some amazing things. And, you know, I was reminded of it. I put some pictures up saying I still don't believe, you know, like when you stand in Sedona or you stand in the Grand Canyon, and, you know, the forests and the pine tree. I don't think this is what most people think of when they think of Arizona.
Or you go up on the Mogollon Rim?
Right.
They think of
like
gorgeous
tumbleweed rolling along at 112, not 80 degrees, and pine trees as far as the eye can see or the amazing red rocks of Sedona. So having said that, we know there's great reasons to be living here, but economics drives these decisions for a lot of folks, and that might be why we are seeing so many folks coming here from the West Coast.
Right. So you've got Redfin, and it tracks more than a million home searches across the U.S. And they found that the Valley recently topped their list of areas they expect to see the biggest increase of people moving here from other cities. We find out that folks from L.A., Seattle, Denver are all looking at Phoenix as a potential place to live.
I think more and more folks are coming to the conclusion, and I have lots of folks, friends and acquaintances that live in California, specifically the L.A. area. And even there, they're starting to talk like people around here were talking right before the housing market blowed up.
You mean like it's inflated?
Oh.
Okay.
That they're seeing, you know, 20% increases a year in value.
You know, okay, so
houses are selling before they go on the market. People are offering $100,000 over the asking price. You know, those types of things.
So it's funny that you bring that up.
Stop me if you've heard it before.
I was on vacation last week, and I was in the Outer Banks in North Carolina. And we were staying in this really nice house, 4,000 square feet. It had like 5 bedrooms. I mean, it was a really nice house. And there was just one road, and then on the other side was the beach. So you could practically spit and hit the ocean, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So for giggles, my husband looks it up on Zillow.
Yeah.
Like, what does a house like this go for, right?
I know these numbers.
It was like $750,000.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, put this house
mm-hmm.
in California?
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at like
$6 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
He was blown away at the cost of a beach house in North Carolina versus
the beach house
in, yeah.
What? You know that I do my Captain Bruce stuff. That I get to be captain of a boat, which I enjoy. I have to hashtag Captain Bruce. There are 1 and 2 bedroom condominiums in Santa Monica, Venice, Marina Del Rey area, just outside of LAX by the beach. You're talking 7 figures to get into a place, Pamela, that you wouldn't consider for a walk-in closet. You're talking about, hey, it starts at $1.2 million, but it doesn't come with a parking spot. It's a 1-bedroom efficiency apartment. Like, are you kidding me?
Right. The prices are ridiculous, but I was also kind of interested to find out that, you know, you've got home buyers from LA, Seattle, and Denver that have Phoenix at the top of their list of potential places to move. And while I love Phoenix and I choose to live here as well, I'm like, well, why is that? Well, when you start comparing the numbers, because that's where you really start to get into the nitty-gritty of it all. The median home price here in Phoenix,
okay,
about $260,000.
$260,000 for the median.
Okay.
All right. Still sounds a little high for most people, but I get it because there's a lot of million-dollar homes.
Denver,
Colorado.
I would not have known this. So we're $260,000.
I think Denver's pricier to live than here.
$440,000.
I did not know it was that pricier.
Right?
That's a lot.
And I didn't realize that Seattle was even more expensive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At $485,000.
Yeah, because there's a lot of tech up there. Keep that in mind.
And then L.A., the typical house in L.A. costs $550,000.
Hold on 1 second. Back that up for a second. The typical home in the Los Angeles area is over $500,000. But this is why we are looking so good. I know tons of people who are looking at the value of their home. 3, 4, 5 years ago, they bought a house or a condo in Los Angeles, and it's worth almost twice as much today. They're saying, I could sell my efficiency 1-bedroom apartment for $1.3 million. Look at what I can buy in Phoenix for that, for the love of it. Now, that's good and bad. It tends to drive prices up here, but, we do benefit from growth.
Absolutely, we benefit from growth. And when you look at, like, the incomes as well, you know, Phoenix is incredibly affordable by just comparing home prices, but what you earn is also good. So when you look at our median income versus
the median home price,
it is a very good balance. And no wonder you've got folks from L.A., Seattle, and Denver looking to move here. And if you've already pulled the trigger,
hey,
we'd like to say,
welcome.
Willkommen.
All right.
And why would you wait? What did you say after
they'll
that?
Come in. That's German.
We're in Phoenix, not Germany.
I thought
man.
Maybe a few Germans showed up. You never know. You know, it happens. I don't know welcome in enough different languages. I'll get to work on that. I don't think amazing accurately describes what happened this morning when President Trump and Vladimir Putin held a press conference. We'll give you the latest, play you some of that audio. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.